Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his name in his honor. Although Brian left us over 2 years ago, we try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Every Tuesday at 11, a group of august Vachon Maury Islanders plus one, that would be me, gather to discuss what's going on here on Vachon and around the world and share their unfiltered thoughts on how we deal with the current state of affairs. Today, our smaller than usual three musketeers include our repository of historical facts, Bruce Herodotus Holman, zooming in from his Vachon home.
Thank you, Craig. That's a lofty barrier to sort of overcome. I'm not sure I'm capable.
It's aspirational, Bruce. Yeah.
And aspirational. Everything is, right?
And Truman O'Brien, who's keeping us technically on track and morally in line from the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, uptown if you live some parts on the island.
That's true.
And me, Crash Craig Bellis, sitting here in the studio next to my airplane partner where I can keep a watchful eye on Captain My Captain.
Thank goodness somebody is.
Really. For some unknown reason, these two turned the host duties over to me today, so please bear with me on my virgin turn at the helm. Joining us today in the studio is our special guest, Lisa Peretti, accomplished international stage actor, playwright, composer, to discuss her musical play about to open at Vachon High School, Winghaven Park. Lisa wrote the book, the music, and the lyrics. Whenever I have the pleasure to meet islanders like Lisa, I feel like such an underachiever.
Indeed.
But first, we'll talk quickly about what's going on in each of our worlds. Truman, anything you want to share with us aside from that racking back issue?
Yeah, I've been so absorbed with this stupid back that I've got is that I hardly can think about anything else. I did get another little shot in the back the other day. That was a lot of fun. Actually, I have to tell you, folks, if you have to have an epidural in there for pain or whatever, don't worry about it. It's a piece of cake. I was really surprised.
Yeah, I know you were concerned that that second one was going to be a real.
Yeah, they told me, you got to have a driver come in with you because your leg's not going to work.
Just a pinch.
Yeah, just a pinch. That's what they say. Oh, it's going to be real cold now. No, just a little pinch. Nah, it was a piece of cake. But anyway, that's all that's going on with me.
Yeah, really? Okay. Bruce, how about you?
Well, it's lots of things going on, particularly with the heat that we're about to experience. But it was interesting. This morning I was out walking with my friend Terry Donnelly. We walk a lot of mornings, not enough, but a lot. And we were out at Docton Forest at the Upper Gold Beach trailhead and walked in there and looked out across Puget Sound. And I mean, I've done that walk hundreds of times, and I live at KVI and watch Puget Sound all the time. I have never seen it so totally flat. Mm. I mean, there was not even a ripple of wind or a ripple of a tide movement. I mean, it was just like a mirror, and it was pretty amazing. So, which tells me that we're in for a real blast of heat later today and probably the next couple of days. So that was one thing. The other thing is this is the middle of crab season. Crab season opened the first weekend in July, closes the last weekend of August, and so it's only open for 2 days on Sunday and Monday. I think they did that so they get the weekend crowd out on Sunday and they get the diehards out on Monday. But it's actually been a good season. Lots of big Dungeness, which we haven't seen for the last few years. And of course, they closed the season for a couple of years. So if you are a crabber, it's actually a good season this year. And it's like this morning walking, the last two, Sunday and Monday, out setting pots at 6:37 in the morning. it's just glorious being out on the Sound. I mean, it's just amazing.
So I've also heard, though, that the rock crab is really good this year as well.
They are, and big.
Yeah.
Yeah, big rock crab. Yeah,
so, that's good to hear. I'm always afraid they're going to go away. So.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting debate on about whether, which is better, Dungeness or Red Rock. And Red Rock are a little harder to extract from
hence
the shell.
The name.
But they're great. And of course, Dungeness are Dungeness. Yeah. I ran into an interesting etymological kind of issue. Pam and I were talking the other day. Is it pronounced Dungeness or Dungeness? And apparently the British English and East Coasters pronounce it Dungeness, and we pronounce it Dungeness. So go figure.
We do have those issues, don't we? Should get to your friend from Miles.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, from Montana. Yeah. Have her look that up.
Sort of like Winston Churchill said, you know, America and England are two countries separated by a common language.
Exactly.
In my life, I have my wife back. She's back from the wilderness. She's been up in the Pasayton for the last week on a horse. One of her, if not her absolute favorite thing to do in the world. She does that several times a year. And they had a great trip with a bunch of islanders that went with them. And I think they all thoroughly enjoyed themselves. I was home, you know, taking care of the animals, which I love doing, the horses, the cats, the dogs, the whole crowd. The other thing I wanted to mention is we have our last 2 days of our Voice of Vashon raffle coming up. Truman and I were out there in front of Thriftway last Friday, selling, had a good time meeting people, talking to people, harassing people.
Yeah.
Browbeating.
Yeah.
No. I don't know, are you going to try to be out there this Friday?
Yeah, for sure. And you know what is amazing to me? Folks are so supportive of Voice of Vashon. One of the things that they support more than anything is their emergency alert service, which is both via email and on 1650 AM. And we have several antennas, by the way, so that you can get it in more than one place. But that's really an important thing that Voice of Vashon does. And we really appreciate the support of all of our listeners to help us keep that going.
So. Right. And that raffle, when you win it,
that's right.
We guarantee that what you purchase is a raffle ticket. That's about all we can guarantee. But you will have an opportunity to spend 3 minutes racing through Thriftway with your carts, or carts, which you can line up. And we've had people secure upwards of $3,000 worth of goods. Not allowed to pick up drugs or alcohol.
Right.
It's quite the deal. And occasionally the people will win that and they'll donate the food to the food bank.
Yeah.
No requirement, of course, but that's always a nice gesture. You wanted to say something?
I've done a little research here while we were talking.
Uh-huh.
Dungeness, the name means headland of the Dinge, D-E-G-T-E-N-G-E. It's referring to the nearby Dinge Marsh. The marsh was first mentioned in 774 as the Dungemersk. I can't pronounce it. But anyway, there you go.
Boy, we learn something new every day.
New every day, right?
Every day. And by the way,
yes.
Today in history.
Yes.
In 1903, Horatio Nelson Jackson, Sewall K. Crocker, and the bulldog named Bud, not Buddy, like our honorary mayor, but Bud, completed the first automobile trip across the United States from San Francisco to New York in a 2-cylinder, 20-horsepower Winton.
Well, there
took
you go.
Took him 63 days, 12 hours, and 30 minutes.
Wow.
And in 1903, there were only 150 miles of paved road, and they were all in the cities.
Whoa. Those are some intrepid folks.
It begs the question, though. See, the car was built in Cleveland, Ohio.
Yes. Okay, how did he get out there?
Well, yeah, how did he start in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Of course, by train.
I was going to say, did they have trains in those days? I don't know.
And the other great irony of that race was that it was supported by blacksmiths and horses to pull them out of the riverbeds and to repair the broken. And that those people that were helping him out were basically put out of business.
Yeah, by helping them do that.
That's
Isn't that
right.
Crazy?
Over time.
Huh. No good deed goes unpunished.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
Also on this day in 1948, President Harry Truman issued Executive Order 9981 to desegregate the United States Armed Forces, directing, quote, equality of treatment and opportunity in the military. By the way, 1 year earlier, Truman signed a new law creating the CIA.
Really?
Yeah, on this day, on this very day. Also, this is National Aunt and Uncle Day, Bagel Fest Day, Coffee Milkshake Day. That sounds good today, you know, a coffee milkshake. National Disability Independence Day. The Americans with Disability Act was signed today, 1990. Wow. And it's All or Nothing Day, Go For It Day.
Yeah.
Which brings me to our guest.
Oh, except I have one more. I have one more, yes.
What is that?
On this day in 1943, Mick Jagger was born. So there you go.
Oh, that's right. You were doing a little bit of the night songs earlier. Yeah. His was his open. Yeah, that was one of your opening songs.
It was, yeah. Mick Jagger's birthday today.
Oh, boy. Sorry, is there a test on this?
Yes.
Hey, Lisa, welcome. We appreciate you being here with the Brown Brief Lease this day. How are you?
I'm splendid. I'm in a cool air-conditioned studio, and I love the sunshine streaming in. And this chat has been fascinating. I mean, what a riveting program.
Did you pay her to say that?
No, but I'm glad you feel that way. I really do.
It's true.
No, we appreciate those comments very much. We don't get them very... No.
Yeah.
But I'm curious. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I understand you kind of spent some of your early years here on Vashon and then came back later.
I did. Well, I moved here when I was 5. My parents bought property down at Glen Acres, and I was raised my whole school years all the way through high school and graduated. And then I got stir crazy, and after being a teacher in the mainland and going to college for a while, I flew off to London, England, and emigrated there, and decided I was going to study to be an actor and a writer, and then I studied various things. And 2017, I moved back and live in the house I grew up in.
Wow.
So I consider myself a native, but I've also come back with new eyes on this beautiful place. And, you know, Vashon's in my DNA, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there are places that you cannot go back to, but Vashon's not one of them.
That's so true.
That's right.
We've all had
that experience where we've gone back to places we went in our youth and we go, oh, I should have just stayed away.
You know? Not so Vashon. Not so. It's got, it is a different place from what it was when I was a kid. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, even the artistic and cultural scene is vastly different. There's so much wonderful stuff going on, you know, for all sorts of opportunities for people. But when I was a kid, I mean, you know, Drama Doc was probably it as far as the theater company.
Yep.
And there was maybe a chorus, but I don't think there was the huge, wonderful arts organizations you have now. And
that was only 5 years ago, wasn't it?
Well,
Well, when you went to Merry Old England, you went to some of the best schools, did you not?
Well, I did, yeah, and that surprises me more than anybody. But I trained in musical theater in my 20s when I was in my 20s, and then I started to work. I emigrated and got an agent, started to work, and then. You know, then I decided, well, I want to do a master's degree, so because I thought I wanted to just to learn more and not just be a performer. So I applied for a master's level degree at University of London, actually King's College of University of London. And then they did a cooperative degree with the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in Performance Studies. And so I got a place and it was fantastic. It kind of felt like it gave me a bit more of a deeper rounding in theater and theater practice.
It sounds like a tremendous preparation for what you launched into later. And you seem to have launched into all aspects of stage, theater, song, You're not a dancer, too, are you?
No, you know, that's one thing I don't do. No, I have danced in shows, but no, I'm not a trained dancer by any shape of the imagination. No, I am. When you're in theater, almost every theater person is multi-skilled. You have a number of strings to your bow. And I started out as an actor singer and then did musicals because I could sing, so I understand that genre. And then when I went into my master's, I thought I like creating, and I thought, you know, the interesting thing about art to me is being the person that creates the content. If you're creating things that don't exist, and then you're creating an economy around yourself. You're making a creative economy because you're creating something that other people can gather around, rather than me waiting for the phone to ring and an agent to say, "Here, we have an audition for you." It's a far different dynamic.
With a little more control.
Way more control. And it's not about control. It's about creating something that people can come around, and then it's more exciting and it's more fulfilling for me.
Right.
For me, it is.
No, I understand that. That makes eminent sense.
So I know that when you have an agent and, you know, you're being courted by various, it seems to me that would be easier than going out yourself and making it happen. So what, do you find that true, or do you?
Well, yeah, your agent's got all the connections, and then exactly. when you're a writer and you're developing something, the thing you have to do, and it sounds so basic, you have to complete. You can't just have an idea that you're pitching to people. Right. You have to have something that's on paper, otherwise it doesn't exist. Same thing when I was learning to be a songwriter, and I was a songwriter before I wrote plays. But, a song doesn't exist if it's just singing in your head. You've got to put it on paper. Then it becomes an entity. It becomes like a little piece of real estate. And then that's when you've got something you can share with people, and people can come around. And then again, it starts to become, takes on a momentum of its own. Does that answer your question? But it's different. It's a different kind of. You have to convince people your idea is a good one, and then the material has to back it up. Right, I mean, if the material on paper isn't interesting, then
now,
back to the drawing board.
If you write the music and you write the lyrics, I assume you play some instruments or two or three.
Yeah, well, I'm not two or three. I play. my mother taught me how to play the piano. And I don't know if, you know Lauren Sinner of... Lauren Sinner, right?
Represented him
for
many years.
Well, his dear mother was our neighbor, and she was my first piano teacher.
Oh.
Yeah, and she passed away, sadly. But and then my mother taught me how to play, and grew up playing the piano. I had a musical family, but no one was a professional musician. Just good standard, you know. We could all sing and we could all play the piano. So that's my instrument. And then when but because we were a musical family, we sang. And so I could sing and read music. And then I started taking lessons. My mom said, you know, you should go take lessons. And then I took, and I cannot remember the woman on the island who I took from, but she was I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but I started taking lessons, and then I became more accomplished as a singer.
You're talking voice lessons.
Singing lessons.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, Lauren's mother didn't keep a metronome, time the way my father used to. He'd roll up a newspaper and hit me on the head to make sure I could. But we needn't talk about that anymore.
I was going to say, though, Craig, that reminds my flight instructor used to pull off his baseball cap. We flew in a tandem airplane. We're front and back.
Oh, yeah.
I was sitting in front. He would pull off his baseball cap and whack me over the back of the head with the base. So
we've had pilots together. Well,
experience.
Some might say we're not that great a pilot.
Well, that's true. That's true. Not together.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So you've had an opportunity to engage as an actor and a singer in various plays or musicals, have you not?
I have. I was very fortunate when I left drama school in London. The drama school promotes you into the business, and so you have a showcase in London in one of the big theaters, and all the casting directors and agents are invited to come and see the new talent. So I was fortunate enough to get an agent and a job after this showcase, and so I signed with an agent in London, and my first job was the European tour of Phantom of the Opera.
Wow.
And
wow.
I was the understudy for the leading lady. I had my range is a little different now, but back then I was a high soprano, and so my voice got me the work, basically, so, mm-hmm. I could sing that role of, wow. of
you didn't,
Christine.
You didn't lay out any booby traps for the person you were the under.
No, I didn't need to. I was able to go on quite a bit. And then, but you're busy. I was singing other stuff, you know, for people. And, you know, when they, because it's a tiring show. That show's a tiring show.
I'll bet it is.
Sung all the way through. And you're touring as well, and that's tiring. So, we all helped.
Got to be in good shape.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. And you have to stay in good vocal and physical shape.
One thing that strikes me is having been an actor and having worked, I would think it would make you a better playwright or better director, better, you know, producer, because you understand the difficulty of what those people are doing.
I really feel that's true. I think that, when I write something, I always think, well, would I want to be in this? Would I want to say this? And then I think what I've also been given is the ability to, I can see it. What you have to have a sense of theatricality to write plays. If you don't, you're not going to be a good playwright, in my opinion. You have to know, what's the audience going to see? What are they going to feel? What are the moments? What are the beats in a piece? And, and all the layers, the visual and the sound and the spoken word and the things that everything reads, you know, it's a visual as well as verbal.
You always see in the old days in the movie, the director has this little frame that he's looking through at but I would think you would have to have that in your brain, you know, that
that's right. Yeah.
Framing what you're going to see, right?
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah, you do. You have to see the stage or some kind of stage that you would see it in,
right.
and know what how the audience is potentially going to receive it.
Exactly.
That audience receptivity. Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Did I read or come across the fact that you had worked with Anthony Newley?
I did. And you know, I really credit a lot of my songwriting, whatever you want to call it, ability or know-how, if you want to say. I credit a lot of that with him. I toured with him in the UK. We played three cities, Birmingham, Bournemouth, and Bristol. So I worked with him for 6 months. And he was a kind of a legend of the musical theater world. I mean, he wrote two huge popular musicals, but he was his songwriting. It's the songs out of his shows that really sold, you know, Candyman from Willy Wonka,
sure.
Sammy J. Davis, What Kind of Fool Am I? Who Do I Turn To When Nobody Needs Me? Tony Bennett made that a huge hit. I mean, he and Leslie Bricus actually wrote a lot together. And, you know, he just had, he understood, he said, you got to write songs that have legs, that get up and walk. You can write a show, but the songs that got to stand on their own, if you can write as many standalone songs and that got legs that to get up, you know, they got legs, and that's a good skill to have. So, you know, we talked a lot about that and his ability to write beautiful melodies, poignant words. I really kind of consider him a role model.
That brings up another question. So when you write, have you written with other people before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a collaborator for many years named Jerry Piger. He was a pianist and an arranger. Mm-hmm. So he and I wrote a few songs in England that were part of that were commissioned by the British Legion, Royal British Legion. And so we've written that. We've written an album. We wrote seven original pieces for an album that I recorded. Various styles. So he was someone that, to work with somebody who understood, first of all, the notation software, because everything's done on computers now. Right. So back, I've learned that. I'm not an expert at it, but I've learned that since then. But he and I were collaborators on just, you know, finding interesting melodies, finding ways to map out a song and to kind of give a creative voice, a clear voice of what does a Lisa Peretti song sound like? And so to have someone like that, for, you know, 10 years or so we wrote together.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You can have it echoing back to you
as you're doing it. And then to know how to, you know, how to lay out the piano vocal score and things like that. He was very, very helpful and still a dear friend of mine.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool.
We're talking to Lisa Peretti, who is an Islander and was an Islander for quite some time in her youth and childhood and has come back to the island. And to bring us up to the present, you have a play that you basically did everything for.
I think she built the sets as well.
I almost.
Oh, no,
I painted. No, you didn't paint the set. Yeah. Okay, you made the costumes. No, but you did write it. You wrote the book, I guess, for the play and the music and the lyrics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's called Winghaven Park, and it's going to be opening at the Vashon High School Theater, theater, as we always say, on Vashon.
Yes.
On Friday, August 26th, so just about a month from now. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about it.
It is a nod to the golden age of musicals. If you like romance, if you like a bit of mystery, if you like a few plot lines that kind of twist and turn around, this will be the show for you. It's about an actress who grew up on Vashon, leaves Vashon, becomes very famous, and comes back to raise money for war bonds. And, of course, when she comes back, things are not going to be simple and easy for her. So her high school sweetheart is still here, and of course he's still single. there's a secret that could derail her career, and there's also the racial tensions of the war. And you know, the war I don't think we understand fully, unless you were living that time, how the war permeated everything. I mean, it created a different climate on the island at that time, and of course the tragic internment of the Japanese. And so the show deals with a lot of stuff.
That's a lot of plot, a lot of subplots.
A lot of subplots and major plot, yeah.
What is the time frame?
It's 1944, okay. During the Strawberry Festival.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I don't have my list of what the Strawberry Festival was called in 1944.
Bruce, do you have your list with you? I don't have it with me.
Truman and I emceed the parade.
Yes.
Bruce, of course, who is our resident historian, gave us a list of the various names of all of the festivals from 1909, I think.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know if during the war the festival happened every year.
There was
a gap. I kind of took some poetic license probably, but anyway.
That's
Bruce.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, no. The festival was canceled during the war, but that's the nature of art, is you can take that license
right.
And run with it. So, yeah, very appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah, and the play is what, going to be running 2 weekends or more than that?
2 weekends. It's going to 7 shows over 2 weekends. So we open on the 26th of August. You've got 3 shows that weekend, and then we have shows the 31st of August and September 1, 2, 3.
It sounds fantastic. And, of course, to us who live on Vashon, it would take on special meaning for sure. And it covers some territory that's near and dear to your heart, Bruce, as president of the museum, the Heritage Society here on the island, and the work you've done with Mukai and whatnot. I have a feeling you'll probably be there for sure.
Oh, definitely. Well, and Lisa and I, gosh, Lisa approached me over a year ago now. Pandemic,
a long time ago. I'm actually before the pandemic. You were giving a talk at the Land Trust, and it's like you're just putting away your stuff after your lecture or whatever you're doing. And I came up to you and I said, excuse me, can I have a bunch of questions about fashion history? I've been pestering you ever since. But yeah, it's been at least three years, if not more.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, it just shows that you have some authenticity to your play. I mean, you know, that it's when you have the support of Bruce Hallman with your facts, you can't be too far off, you know?
I know.
He's been instrumental. Matter of fact, his name is in the acknowledgments.
Credits, for sure. Well, and rightfully so, I might add.
it was fascinating. I mean, trying to take the historical reality and take this, you know, sort of imaginative construct and bring the two together. I mean, it was a very powerful, creative kind of process of just saying, well, this didn't quite happen that way, or you might want to be aware of this. And, you know, I think, at least for me, Lisa, and I think for you too, it was just a very creative kind of back and forth, trying to sort of build in that verisimilitude so that it didn't seem out of place.
Wait a minute. There was a $50,000 word.
I just threw that out there.
Yeah, we like that.
Holy cow. Would pick it up, right?
Well, listen, that just throws a little.
People have to know what Herodotus is, who he is.
It's a little class to this show. That's what we needed here, you know?
Oh,
my. Did you want to say something? Or
yeah, I did have a comment. And that, I know that this is getting, you know, the cart before the horse here. But you're premiering the play here, I assume?
Yeah, this is its first time on its feet in a production. Yeah.
So I guess I have two questions. Will there be edits or amendments as you perform the play, or do you do that as you're rehearsing for the play? Do you make amendments and changes?
That's a great question. And, you know, we have had three workshops of the play in the last, you know, in the last year and a half with different cast members, and then with our wonderful director, Kelly Kitchens, and our producer, consulting producer, Lewis Hobson. And but this time when we go into rehearsals, which is tonight, I'm so excited. We have our full cast is meeting tonight, and we're going to start rehearsals in earnest. But yes, we will be making changes, because once it's on its feet and you hear it sung and hear the words spoken, we're going to be making changes quite a bit in the first week or two, probably.
And then once you begin the performance, I assume you pretty much lock it in.
It's
that
locked
point.
In. Yeah. Yeah. There comes a point where this is the production script.
You got to do it, right? And my other question is, I mean, again, getting the cart before the horse, if it's successful here, or if you feel that it's successful here, do you plan on taking it somewhere else, or and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different ways to develop a musical, and there's a lot of different ways for it to have a life beyond Vashon. So, yes, the intention is that it would have a life beyond Vashon. So, you know, you invite interested parties. You find people who are in the business and on the commercial side of the business and invite them. We've had some people walking alongside us that have been very, very helpful in that regard. We definitely want to see it have a life beyond here. But the first thing we need to do is see it in front of an audience here. And this is the place where it'll be refined. But we thought, well, we didn't want to do it just, oh, let's just do a staged reading or something, because we've kind of done that with invited audiences. We thought, well, let's give Vashon the full thing. You know, let's get a set, within our budget, of course, but let's just give them a show to come and see. And then we can really see how it hangs together. And if the audience responds well, that's the biggest piece of information we can have. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking of Kat Eggleston's play, The Cyclone Line.
Oh, I loved that.
It wasn't that brilliant.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Are we lucky on this island?
We are.
I mean,
extraordinarily lucky.
It's just
lucky.
Amazing.
You made
town.
Reference, Lisa, to Beyond Vashon. Is there anything beyond Vashon?
Not in my understanding, there isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing on the other side of that ferry.
Maybe Trader Joe's. But
there you go. Yeah, that's right. Metropolitan Market, maybe. Yeah, yeah.
Lisa, we thank you for joining us. Is there anything else that you wanted to add that should have covered? I appreciate the fact that you mentioned some of the individuals that you're working with on the play. That was good.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, I guess the thing to say is that this is a once in a lifetime event. It's an event. It's a story about Vashon for Vashon. It's like my love letter and my love song to the island, and it's not just me. It takes just so many people and so much support and fundraising to get this thing off the ground. I cannot tell you, but you know, I wouldn't be able to do it by myself. It's a collaborative effort. That's the most important thing, and it's amazing. It'll be amazing.
It sounds amazing. Where do you buy the tickets?
Dramadoc.org. Dramadoc.org.
And you have, if you just plug in Winghaven Park, you'll come up with information.
It'll take you to the website.
I found the website. One more quick question about this. How many actors are going to be in the play, and are they all local or are they off island? Who are they?
Most of them are on island, but we have 19.
Wow.
Yep, and it's about six or seven principal characters, and then the ensemble is another 9 people, and they play multiple roles because we're trying to depict a town. So different. It's great. They're busy, and it's a dynamic cast. They're fantastic.
Good. Okay.
Great. Thank you very much, Lisa, for joining us. Well, how much time do we have left?
We have about 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Or so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to join.
Please do.
We'll hang around, yeah.
Yeah,
sounds
we
fun.
Resolved the all of the issues of the day in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
that's what the Brieflys do.
That's why we're Briefly.
That's right. We live in very interesting times. As you know, we have a pandemic that seems to never go away, and another one, it seems the monkeypox is on the verge of being named a pandemic. It's biblical. I'm not panicking yet. I'm not going to panic until it starts to rain frogs. You know, that would probably push me over the edge. We've got growing economic dislocations, rising interest rates, a vicious war in Europe, the rise of autocracies around the world, a seditious conspiracy to overthrow our democracy at home. Secret Service agents assigned to former President Donald Trump.
Dogs and cats living together, right?
Yeah, who destroyed their text messages from January 6th. It goes on and on and on. But the one thing that kind of gets me here, as I was watching the news this morning, is we have this existential climate crisis that is burning up the planet. Yosemite, and we have friends who've had to evacuate out of their homes there by Mariposa. Just out of control, the Oak Creek fire. I saw today that St. Louis had broken all records in terms of flooding. They had 8 inches of rain in 7 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
It goes on and on and on. And the weather, of course, throughout the entire country for the next week is supposed to be off the charts. But a question arose as I was thinking about this. And it's, how do we deal with this existential crisis of climate change in a democracy? Is a democracy suited to dealing with this kind of major issue? Now, the issue, of course, is there anything better? But is it really the best way to deal with the kinds of things that need to be done to address this issue? Bruce, you got any thoughts on that subject? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's again back to Winston Churchill. You know, he said, democracy is the worst kind of government there is, except for all the others.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that concept of, democracies are difficult to get decisions made and to have, you know, decisions, you know, implemented and to have policies sort of take place. And yes, you're right in a sense, Craig. You know, autocracies do it much more quickly, but much less effectively in the long run. I mean, that's really the problem with autocracies, is that they're the focus of a single point of view, whereas democracies are a focus of multiple and competing points of view. And that's the strength, but it's also the weakness of democracies. And when you confront, like you say, an existential crisis, like climate change, you know, the United States is stumbling forward, you know, and I'm not sure anybody else is doing any better at this point, even the autocracies, because there's certain economic and social forces that are preventing us from addressing, you know, climate change. I think Lisa, you know this well. You've lived in London for a while. Mm-hmm. When it was 104 in London,
mm-hmm. I was there. Yeah,
it had to be devastating, you know. And it's going to take a few of those kind of things, and the floods in St. Louis, and you know,
Yellowstone, for crying out loud.
Yeah, Yellowstone burning up. Yosemite burning up. I mean, at some point, people have to realize this is real. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just a Donald Trump fake news kind of thing.
That's right.
And when that happens, there'll be a massive change in sort of the ability of democracies around the world to move forward. But people just haven't taken it. People don't see it as real yet.
Yeah. What I was going to say about that, Bruce, is not only do you have to, I mean, it's an advertising campaign. Really. I mean, it's
everything is marketing these days.
Exactly. No, it is. I mean, you have to convince people of that whatever it is that you're trying to sell them is true, you know, is real. And since it's so darn politically charged, it changes your audience. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be speaking to the choir on one hand, and on the other, you're going to be talking to a wall, you know, trying to get some sense. Yeah, into that nonsensical approach.
So. Yeah, yeah. Lisa, you have any great insights?
Well, I don't. But, you know, it just made me wonder, you know, the democratization of water came into my mind because I thought, you know, resources like that, you know, how are we going to determine who gets what and who gets access to stuff? Because we already have disparity in the world around water, you know, and that's just one part of the climate issue is water. But, you know, how are we going to manage that? And how, you know, the haves that have are going to have more or they're going to, you know, it's kind of scary because there's not a, well, I suppose people are having a plan, trying to get a plan in place. But
I heard they're talking about pumping water from the ocean to Salt Lake.
Oh, to refurbish?
To fill Salt Lake back up with salt water from the ocean.
Wow.
I mean.
Well, you know, I read an article here the other day about what states are having the greatest, or what cities are having the greatest inflows, and which cities are having the greatest outflows. In a nutshell, the northern cities are having the outflows, and the southern cities are having the inflows. I mean, it's all these cities in Florida, Texas, Arizona, and Southern California. And I'm thinking, who are these people that are moving to this 115-degree weather where they're running out of water, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
It makes no sense, does it? Well, it doesn't make any sense to me, but what do I know? You know, if Bruce, you become our dictator, then we'd be happy, and you'd be able to address all these issues. So.
Sure, the great dream, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
Don't look behind the curtain.
Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, okay, yeah. What do you think about this the Secret Service detail that seems to have specifically destroyed their texts from the day in question, January 6th?
You know, what strikes me, I just read something and I thought, boy, this is it exactly. They said that the repercussions from destroying the emails or the text is a lot less than the fallout from the actual text. So they had to go, which is worse, you know? And so, boy, that's got to tell you that the texts are going to be pretty darn damning.
That is some circumstantial evidence of that very, very thing. Bruce? Yeah.
Well, and I can't imagine, I mean, with the CIA and the National Security Administration and the way they tap into electronic communications, I think those exist somewhere.
They've got to. They've got to.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you could wipe your phone, but, you know, I'm not sure you can wipe out, you know, and even if you wipe a computer, if somebody else is tapping into it and somebody else is monitoring it. And so I think it's going to be a Watergate moment. There's recordings out there.
Yeah,
when
I hope
they come out, they're going to be devastating.
Well, there's some of the Secret Service guys are lawyering up already, and probably a very good idea.
Yeah, I would advise them to do that. Yeah,
well, I guess you would. Being an attorney.
Before we move on, I had one quick question for Lisa. Just in terms of, you know, how do you use the arts to address these kinds of questions? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're addressing an issue of racism and, you know, discrimination in the past. You know, can a program like Wing Haven, can the arts deal with these kind of things?
Yes, I think they have to. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, is to have it be centered in story and in character so that then it's humanized. Right. Otherwise, it'd be, you know, an ideology never wrote a good play. And that's from a friend of mine. That's his quote, and I thought it was a really good one. But you know, but if you're taking a story, and how do these things impact, and what is the struggle that a character is going through in order to, and what happens when they don't achieve their goal, or you know, tragedy or comedy, however you want it, the story to end. That's the way that it is most moving. Because if you don't touch the heart of people, you have to art touches the heart and it touches the soul. And that's where a transformative change happens. And that's what art can do better than anything else.
Well, it brings it home. Mm-hmm. It makes it real.
Yeah, it has to be real for you. Yeah, and if you're just listening to a talking head on a news broadcast or something, it's like, okay, well, we'll switch it off. And, you know,
Exactly.
Sort of like listening to the Brown Briefly.
Yeah. Oh, no, we change hearts and minds here.
At least for a minute or two. Hopefully we get people to think a little bit about it. Hey, for Lisa Peretti and Truman O'Brien, Bruce Holman, and me, Craig Bellis, thank you for joining us. And we'll see you all next week for the next edition of The Brown Briefly.
Indeed, we will. And see you all next week.
Thank you so much.